Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing, and today I'm joined by Rob Ashton, founder and CEO at Emphasys. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Andy. It's great to be here.
So, Rob, before we start, we're going to be talking about content production and good things like that. Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Emphasys.
Emphasys is the world's biggest provider of writing skills training and consultancy. I'm the founder, set it up way back in 1998, so I must be due a long service award by now.
Yeah.
And we've trained over 40,000 people across the globe to transform what they write, including web content.
Now, content, because that's what you're about, or certainly the writing of content. We have covered this a few times on the podcast. Let's just sort of remind ourselves why it's so important.
Sure. Well, successive updates from Google have repeatedly prioritized content quality. If you go back to Panda update, which was way back in 2011, that's when Google started penalizing content farms. Yeah. I know Matt Cutts, the anti-spam czar, didn't say they were targeting content farms, but everybody knew that's what they were doing. And Google's been on a drive to improve content quality ever since. Whenever they have an update, they invariably prioritize quality content. Now, that's created both an opportunity and a problem. It's an opportunity because, you know, if you can provide good content, then great. Google will love you. But it's meant, if you think about the size of the web, it's meant that everybody has jumped onto that bandwagon. And they said, okay, well, it's not about just churning out content, but it is about producing quality content. Let's produce some quality content. And we've got more and more and more of this coming through. And Mark Schaefer coined the phrase content shock back in 2014. He referred to it again a year later and said, pointed out that Content Marketing Institute were predicting a 500% increase in content by 2020. When he wrote a blog a year later, he'd updated that to 600%. So, as he said, so if you think about the size of the web, we're talking about six of those by 2020. Now, if you're in internet marketing, that means that your audience is being spread more and more thinly. Now, Schaefer talks about not just content quantity, but he calls it content density. And what he means by that is that the quality of the content has improved. Density, I guess, referring to, say, the amount of information that the number of facts, if you like, let's say you're looking for facts, the amount of facts in the content, that's improving. And to stand any chance these days, you need to create good content and get it in front of those who need to read it. Andy, content implies some kind of commodity. And I think we're all guilty of this in internet marketing. We treat content as if it's something that can come out of some kind of sausage machine, you know?
A pipe, yeah.
but it's obviously not just about churning out words. You know, the Panda update made that clear. But you need to produce quality content, and in order to do that, you really need to think about it. It's not. I think the problem is that you need to sort of get away from thinking of it as a commodity, and back to thinking of it as almost a work of art. Now,
yeah,
I use that phrase advisedly, because I think there's a real danger that you start thinking, let's get all creative, let's wait until the muse takes us.
Yeah.
It's not about that. It's definitely a skill, but you really do need to focus on that skill.
Because this is one of the problems, isn't it? I mean, as you were saying, there's so much content out there now, and you sort of alluded it to being more of an art. Do you think that's the way to go? People should be trying to do. Is content becoming more like the sort of content we see on TV and here on radio?
To a degree, yeah. I think if you think of journalists and how they approach their work, then you're not far off what's required. Curator's 2016 content marketing survey, their marketing staffing and tactics barometer, great phrase.
Yeah.
They were looking to find the single biggest skill set missing from today's content marketers. Now think about that. Content marketers, it's all about content, right?
Yeah.
The biggest single skill set missing, they found, was the ability to create content. So it's almost like we're missing the obvious here. It's let's talk about our content. Let's optimize it. Let's push it out there. We forget that actually somewhere along the line, it's about words, and it's about choosing the right words and writing something that's going to be engaging. It's about writing. I use that word.
Yeah.
It's not about churning out content. It's about writing something. I listened to a podcast interview recently with Malcolm Gladwell, Tim Ferriss's podcast, and Gladwell was just saying that Tim Ferriss said, "Malcolm, do you suffer from writer's block? How do you get over writer's block?" And he just laughed, because he said, "Look, I'm a staffer on The New Yorker. I have a deadline to meet every week. If I went to my editor and said, really sorry, I had writer's block, the muse didn't strike me, it really wouldn't last very long." And I think, we need to get back to that. We've got to say, okay, right, this is a skill that we need to focus on. If we focus on that, then we're going to get a long way. We're going to get much further with content marketing. But it's going back to that and focusing on that as a skill.
Yeah, it's a bit like an MMA fighter going into the cage and saying, actually, I just don't feel like fighting today.
Yeah, what's my motivation here? motivation is, you're not going to get 8 bells knocked out of you. And it's the same with marketing. It's like, right, your motivation is you've got to do this, and you've got to make it good.
So as someone, Rob, who, trains people how to write and is fully aware of the importance of writing, do you think good writers are born or created? That's the same thing, isn't it? Do you think they're born or created sort of post-birth? That's probably a better way of saying it.
I think both. It's far more become good writers. You might get one in a million. I don't know what the statistic is, but it's very rare to get somebody who's just born with a natural gift. In fact, I'd say it never happens. You're not born with a natural gift and then you never develop it. If you don't develop it, you're still going to be a great writer. You've still got to learn that craft. And I think this is the thing that's with any skill. It's very easy to overlook the amount of work that goes into that. But the flip side of that is, if you put the work in, that's going to get you a long, long way. And it is a craft that you can learn. And the best way to do that is to break it down into its component parts. So, if you think of any other craft, and as I say craft, I'm a little bit self-conscious that people are going to think, you're talking about you're back to the muse, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think you need to take almost a scientific approach to this, okay, and say, right, what's going to grab people? Okay, a good introduction. Right. How do you write a good introduction? Well, there are 4 basic types. And if you learn what those 4 basic types are, and you can use one of those, or you can combine them. But if you do that, that's going to get you 90% of the way there. So you're focused on that as a skill. Then you can look at, say, the structure of a blog post. You know, what's a good structure? Okay, well, you should focus it on your readers. So what, you know, who comes to your site? Who are the people you would like to come to your site? What do they, not what do they need, but what do they want to know? Because people focus on their wants, you know. So, okay, so if you can get in, step into their shoes, all good writing starts with stepping into the reader's shoes.
Yeah.
And then use that to develop the structure. Okay, well, that gets us part of the way there. But then what? Well, you know, here are some techniques for creating great structure. And so on. You know, you can then sort of go down to the micro level and look at how you structure a sentence to make it very readable, or what words you should choose in order to avoid what Cathy Sierra calls cognitive leaks.
Yeah.
In other words, things that just sort of make you sort of go off at a tangent and go, what does that mean? You know, you want the shortest possible connection between what you're writing and your reader's brain, so that you can just get your messages straight into their brain. You know, you kind of almost think of that as kind of like airspace, you know. Yeah. You want to be there in their head. So how do you get there as quickly as possible?
I think that's
how
one of the biggest challenges, because that's certainly when I try and write, that's one of the biggest things that I have a problem with, just going off in tangents. And you know, I start off writing about one thing, and like an hour down the road, I'm looking at what I've written. I think, hang on a minute, the last two thirds has nothing to do with what I was going to write about.
and that's really, really common.
Yeah.
And the way you get away from that is by treating that as another problem and saying, right, okay, so that's about sticking to what I want to write about. You know, how do I, once I've got my subject matter and I've got my facts, okay, because that's a stage. Research is a stage. Don't mix up research with writing. Yeah. Don't just, you know, the first thing you should do if you're going to write a really engaging blog post is not to just sort of fire up WordPress or whatever text editor you're using and off you go. You know, you shouldn't be looking at your screen at all from a writing point of view. Maybe you can look at it for research. I would advise doing that elsewhere, say on a tablet, to sort of get you away from the screen that you might be composing on, so you're not tempted to start writing prematurely. But you treat that as a discrete phase, okay? So you get your research. With your research, there are various things you can do. We have a technique for researching really effectively, maximizing the number of ideas you generate from that. And notice the plural there. I'm not talking about the ideas for one post, but the ideas for multiple posts, and making sure you don't lose those. So you break that down into a phase. You break the structuring down into a phase. You write in a certain way, you know, over a certain time scale. And if you do all of those things, you just discover that actually you're writing almost, you know, almost as a default, because it's you're not focusing on this blank screen, this terrifying blank screen.
The blank page,
instead,
yes.
You're breaking it down. So, you know, there are various techniques. I think, though, as marketers, we can almost sort of default to what we know best. So we default to data, say, or to user testing. And I had somebody I worked with a few years ago who said, well, look, this is, we don't need to learn this stuff. We just need to do some user testing. And I said, how do you mean? He said, well, we just write something, and if people don't respond to it, then we regard that as a negative event in our user testing, and we do something else. And I said, okay, so how many words typically are we talking about in the blog post? He said, well, I don't know, 500, 1,000. I said, okay, so 1,000 words, how many permutations and combinations have we got of those words, of the words that you're putting down? You know, it's crazy. You're talking about trillions of possibilities. And even if you sort of narrow it down to words that would even make sense, you know, to go from that to a piece of content that's massively engaging, it's just impossible. You know, it's you've got to get away from the marketing skill at that point and focus on the writing skill and treat that as a separate thing. Remember that survey said it was the ability to create content, which meant the ability to write content. I don't think we use that word write often enough, because we think of book authors or novelists. But it is writing, but writing is not one thing. Writing is a whole range of skills. And it's about focusing on each of those.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers.
With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So you talked about user testing there, Rob, which is sort of way of measuring. I'm interested in other ways of measuring sort of good writing.
Yeah, it's something we do quite a lot, actually. It's, I think, if you measure writing, if you break it down into, if you break writing down into its component parts, then you can measure those parts. And this takes you further away from writing being this mysterious dark art, which I think far too many people think of it that way or even teach it that way. You know, that's just not going to resonate from somebody who's data-driven, who wants to take a kind of a measurable scientific approach. It's just completely at odds with the rest of their job. Mm. But if you break it down into its component parts and you say, okay, let's take sentence structure, take, you know, jargon alert, scary grammar term alert, that I don't like to use these very much. But if you take the main part, in a sentence, you've got a main part, and then you've got the secondary part, okay? So you've got what they call the primary and the secondary clause.
Yeah.
Now, if you write the secondary clause first, then you're putting the sentence back to front. And in fact, I've just done that. You know, I said, if you write the secondary clause first. That's my extra information. The main part of that sentence was, you are writing the sentence back to front. Yeah. So instead, I would say, you are writing the sentence back to front if you put the secondary information first, okay? Now,
yes.
If you don't follow that, it doesn't matter, because it's a bit of a technical concept. But the fact is, you can focus in on that and you can measure it and you can see how many times you've done that in your blog post. And if you do it once or twice, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
If you do it half the time, then you're going to make it really difficult to read, not very engaging, and people are going to go off and read something else. Okay, and then you can apply that to other aspects of good writing, such as whether you stuff it full of jargon. Now, jargon, incidentally, not always a bad thing. It can be a great way to segment your audience and to home in on those people you really want. But if you want a general audience, then you need to reduce the amount of jargon. Typically, what causes a bigger problem is the words in between the jargon and whether you're using unnecessarily complex words. And that's going to make it quite difficult to read. And so you can measure that and you can see how many times you use unnecessarily complex words. And so you see, we build it up into these skills and you add in things like introductions and endings. And you can, when we measure it, we give a score for those things. And we produce a graph that shows, right, okay, here's this blog post. Here's what you need to do. Here are your biggest problems. And there are out of 12 that we've measured, 2 or 3 are causing you the most problems. And that will be different for everybody.
Yeah.
And if you home in on those, it's back to the 80-20 rule. You know, if you home in on that 20%, you're going to get an 80% improvement. So let's do that first. And I think as soon as people see that, they start to realize, actually, so this isn't this kind of nebulous thing, this impossible task that I need to turn myself into a good content writer. This is, well, actually, I need to work on my introductions, or I need to work on sentence structure. I need to work on generating good ideas. You know, those are all things that you can learn. None of those things is insurmountable. And, you know, dare I use a cliche, it's not rocket science, you know? It's not rocket surgery.
So, Rob, we've covered quite a few bits and pieces in today's talk, specifically about measuring and good writing. What's the potential win from all this? What's the potential win from focusing on good writing?
You know, if you think about the best blogs out there, you know, I'm talking about things like, well, not just Content Marketing Institute, where it's aimed at our sector, but say Buffer, you know, the Buffer app blog is excellent. Mm. It's very easy to compare yourself with those blogs and say, well, you know, it's fine. They're doing that. They're doing that already. How can I possibly compete? But I think if you go to your particular marketplace, the particular sector in which you operate, there's potentially a huge win here. If you, for instance, let's say you work in law and your specialism is, say, mergers and acquisitions. Okay, that's very specific. Okay, it's off the topic of marketing content, but very much, you know, a niche, quite a big niche, actually. Now, if you say, okay, I can go and write something, and I'll write something on the state of the mergers and acquisitions market. Now, that might appeal to you. That might appeal to other people, your competitors, but it's probably not going to appeal to the people you're targeting, to your potential clients. What your potential clients are going to want to know about is whether it's a good time to sell their business, whether it's a good time to acquire a business, you know, 5 pitfalls to avoid when buying a new business, how to increase your return on an acquisition by 50%, how to increase the offer you get by an acquirer by 100%. Each of those is an angle. So that's just one aspect of focusing on the content. Now, if you do that and you're in that specialist niche, it's pretty likely that your competitors won't be. And so you're going to get yourself a massive competitive advantage. So you're increasing the quality, you're improving the quality of what you're writing, but also by learning these techniques, you speed up the process of producing this content. Okay, so we're almost back to the idea of churning it out, except it's going to be quality this time.
Yeah.
Then you solve the problem, the other problem of content shock, which is the volume, because you will be able to produce volume. So produce this in volume. So in potential, you'll be able to dominate your sector. Now, that might seem a bit far-fetched, but if you're in a niche, if your audience is not the world, but a particular audience, but a particular sector, and maybe a particular part of that sector, then by focusing on this, you can home in on producing things that they absolutely want to read. And in doing that, you position yourself as the expert, which of course is the holy grail, because you can make them aware of the need for what you do, but you also make them associate you with fulfilling that need. You become the expert, they come to you. And it's absolutely worth focusing on this, because you can give yourself a huge competitive advantage.
Well, Rob, thanks so much for coming on and giving us all this good information. How can our listeners find out more about you and more about Emphasis?
Our website is writing-skills.com, but we actually also have an online writing course, so if people want to check that out. In fact, it's the world's most comprehensive online writing course, and that's at e360.writing-skills.com, e360.writing-skills.com. If listeners want to check that out, there's a lot of free stuff there. A lot of those modules are free to view, and if they whet your appetite, then there's a discount code you can use and get a 10% discount. They just put in the code Internet Marketing. That's specifically for your listeners, and they can get a 10% discount as well.
That's fantastic, Rob. Thanks so much for that. We'll put those links in the show notes. Talking of which, they're at the usual place, sitevisibility.com/IMPodcast. We're on iTunes and Stitcher, so have a listen to us there. If you want to leave a review, we're very happy to get reviews at the moment, so please do that. If you want to link up with me directly, I'm Dr. Pod, D-O-C-T-O-R, on LinkedIn and Twitter. And if you want to ask us a question, because in future episodes we're looking to do some more questions and answers, two ways of doing that. The email is podcast@sitevisibility.com, and the magic phone number is +44 1273 256 150. Well, that's all from me, Andy, and it's all from Rob.
Thanks a lot.
And we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.